Please help me welcome Dr. Anil Mehta.
Thank you once again for inviting me here. It's my pleasure and privilege to be here today. With the new year coming and we don't know what it's going to bring, there's a lot of doubts and questions and worries that we have. So I thought this would be a suitable topic. Life is a gift and living is an art. And how are we to live our life so that our life becomes meaningful? As we heard in the beautiful song of Shirley, how can I give? How can I serve? So we say life is a gift. Now, what is a gift? What is the definition of a gift? A gift is something that is given spontaneously, given in love. If I go to the store and buy something for myself, wrap it up and put it under the Christmas tree, a lot of women say, yeah, we have done that before because our husbands don't know what to buy for us. But if I do that, that's not a gift. If I buy it myself, or if I give somebody a gift with the idea that he or she will return the gift, okay, I gave them this much, so I should, then it becomes a business. So gift is something that is given spontaneously, given in love, and given without any expectation of anything in return. So that is the definition of a gift. We have received many gifts in our lifetime. You know, the fact that we live in this country which is free and which is an example of leadership to the rest of the world is a gift. You know, my job, my house, my car, my family. They're all gifts. But the greatest gift that we have and the most precious gift we have is life itself. Just the fact that I am alive, the fact that I am here, as she said, the fact that I am here today is also a great gift. So having life and having health, I think these are the two greatest gifts. If I have my life, because if I am not alive or if I am not healthy, then I'm not able to accumulate all the other gifts. I'm not going to be able to work. I'm not going to be able to have a family or have a house or everything that I have, that I have accumulated, my bank balance, my stock portfolio, whatever I have, it is because I'm alive and I'm healthy. Talking about alive and healthy reminds me of this little story. This man calls the doctor and says, "Doctor, my uncle," the uncle was elderly, he said, "My uncle is not doing very well. You know, he's not well." So doctor says, "I saw him last week. He's fine. His health is okay. He just thinks he's sick. He's not really sick. He just thinks he's sick. So don't worry about it." So the nephew hung up the phone. A week later, the doctor just picked up the phone. He said, "Let me check on my patient." So he calls the nephew. He says, "So how's your uncle doing?" He says, "Not very good. He thinks he's dead." I guess he really was sick. So life is important. So now, what is the price of life? As I said, the life is the most important thing we have, and everything else we have comes after the life. So the life is the most precious. And who gave this precious gift? You know, that is, of course, a very simple question. We don't need to answer that because we know that it is God. You say, "Well, okay, my parents gave me birth." But still, the parents, you know, who made the seed grow in the womb, and then who made the child appear, and then who made the child grow from a little infant to what we are, it is all God's grace. So God is the one who has given us this precious gift of life. And we all know that, and we all accept that, and we all... But the problem is that we don't know how to use this precious gift. And most people think that life is meant, at least that's what I used to also think before I, you know, learned a little bit from my teachers, that basically life is meant for, okay, so I study, I grow up, and then I finish my college, and then I meet a person and get married and have children and take care of their children and build up my business and get a nice house and a car and and get old and, you know, life ends. And that is what the majority of the people think. But if I really do that, then is my life any better than a sparrow's life? Sparrow, she meets her mate, and the male and the female sparrow meet together, and they build a beautiful nest, and that house is not any less than our house and the country club. And they build that beautiful nest, and then they have little children. They teach them how to fly. And once the children are gone, their life ends. So if that's all I'm going to do with my life, then life is not worth living. That is not the way to use the life. So they say that there are only really two goals in life. Yes, all the other things I need to have a family, I need to have money, I need to have my retirement, I need a car, a home, all that. There are only really two important goals that one must have. There is nothing else besides these two. Everything else is secondary. And the first one, as we heard today, is service. Service. I should give back to society because we receive so much from society. You say, well, you know, I go out and earn. I work for what I have. Yeah, but did you work for the sunlight that you get? Did you work for the air? Did you work for the water in the rain? Nature gives us so much. We get so much from the environment that it is our duty to give back. That is part of the karmic duty. Because when I am receiving, if I don't give back, then in the Gita, such a person is called a thief. In the fourth chapter, Sri Krishna says that one who only takes from society and does not give back is a thief. So the first duty is service, to give back. And why is that necessary? Because through service, I am reducing my negative tendencies. Because we all have this tendency of acquiring and possessing and getting. So when I consciously give back, it reduces that. It reduces my negative karmas. And slowly the mind becomes quiet. There is less jealousy, less hatred, less possessiveness, less selfishness. And such a quiet mind is needed for the second, and which is the main purpose of life. That is the only reason we are here, is to realize God. To know God, to realize God, and to become one with Him. And God is not only there in the church or the temple or the mosque or Bethlehem or in Mecca or in Jerusalem, but is in my heart as life. And so that's why we say God realization is the same as self-realization. I am that essential spirit. We are all that essential spirit, what Christ calls the Holy Spirit. We are all that, who at this moment I am occupying this human body and have a name called Anil or Diana or Anne or whatever job or whatever name. But in reality, I am the manifestation of that one divinity, and we are all that. It doesn't matter what race, what caste, what color, what community, what creed, what nationality. And we are all that one spirit, and the goal of life is to experience that, to become one with that, to understand that, that I am that consciousness, I am that spirit. And I still continue to do my duties. But with that understanding that I am that Holy Spirit, once you understand that, then all your actions become pure, your actions become unselfish, spontaneous love comes for all, because we are all that. And as you slowly practice that, as you slowly apply that in your life, you realize that that Spirit and I are one. And then that Holy Spirit, that total consciousness, what you can call God or Brahman or Allah, or that is all one. That is only one, and who is there in all of us. And so I am that, that understanding that ultimately we are all that. So that is the purpose of life. That is the goal of life. That is the only thing that is necessary to do. So that is how we say you should use this precious gift of life to realize God. And it can be done through service, through prayer, through meditation. Meditation is a beautiful, this morning we had a very beautiful meditation for 15 minutes. And so in meditation, I come in contact with the inner self, with the inner spirit. And that's why meditation is one of the very powerful techniques to evolve spiritually. Then we say gratitude for the gift. We should obviously be grateful. You know, anytime I receive something, you know, say I get something on my birthday, I get a bicycle or a ring or whatever, an outfit or a dress, I always say thank you. And when every time I wear that dress, I remember the person who gave it or whatever it is. So similarly, the one who has given us everything, who has not only given us our life, but has given us this beautiful earth to live on, which is perfect. You know, everything is whatever we need. All the minerals are here, all the rocks are here, the petroleum, the gasoline. I mean, everything is here. So whatever I have, we get from the earth. So how do I say thanks to him? You know, when I meet a person who has given me a gift, I always thank him. So how do I thank the Lord? So the founder of our mission, Swami Chinmayananda, said at one time, he said, what you have is his gift to you. What you do with it is your gift to him. Because he is perfect, he is complete, he does not need anything. You know, he is the one that has created not only this earth, but all the universes. But by seeing him in all the beings, by serving all the beings as a service of the Lord, when I'm serving, sometimes it can create some ego or some arrogance or some pride. Why? Because I'm helping this person who needs help. But when I see the Lord and I say that whatever I am giving is my service to him who has given me everything, then automatically even that service becomes pure. Then there is no arrogance, there is no pride. So that's why they say this life is extremely precious. I mean, whatever life we have is 60, 70, 80 years, whatever time you have is a very limited time. And in that, I have to do as much as I can to realize God, to become one with that, and to experience that. So that's why they say use this life sparingly, use it well, and do not waste the gifts you have. We have received innumerable gifts. Our ability to see, hear, our ability to think, our ability to function. Do not waste it. This reminds me of another little story. There was this fisherman who was walking along the beach. And it was dark. It was about 4 o'clock in the morning. The sun had not come out. And only there was in the horizon just a little bit of light. So he couldn't see much. He was walking. And as he was walking on the beach, the tide had brought in a lot of seaweed and a lot of muck and mud and all that. And so he was just kicking and just enjoying himself. It was a very peaceful morning. And suddenly his foot hits a sack. And he opens it. He can't see it, but he feels in. And he finds some rocks in there. He says, I don't know what, maybe some ship dropped something, or maybe this was an anchor or some weight, you know, some in somebody's boat. So he just started carried that sack and he started walking. And then as we do with the rocks, he wanted to play. So he started throwing them and seeing how many times, as kids, we all used to do that. How many times it will hit the water, 4 times, 5 times. And the flatter the rock, the further it goes. I remember we used to all play that. So he started playing that and hitting further and further and seeing how far each rock can go. And he was very happy. He was, you know, skilled and very skillful. So after about half an hour, most of the rocks were gone. And by that time, the light had come. The sun had risen. And so he opens that sack and he can now see what is inside. And he was amazed to see that actually what he had were not rocks, but they were precious diamonds. They were big diamonds that somebody had lost or somebody had dropped. And unknowingly, this sack of diamonds had come in his hand and he just wasted it by throwing it in the ocean. But that is what we exactly do with our life. We have so many talents. Every one of us has a talent. Shirley has this talent for singing and she is doing that for serving all of us. And so we all have wonderful talents. Anne has the talent for service and meditation. And so all of us have certain abilities that are given to us by the Lord. So I have to see. So whatever ability I have, how can I use that to make my life better and to make the surroundings better. Let me be a little lamp. Not every one of us can be Jesus or Muhammad or Swami Chinmayananda. I cannot be like the sun that illumines the whole earth, but I can be like a little lamp that in my neighborhood, in my room, in my surroundings, let me at least light up my neighborhood. Let me make my neighborhood a better place. So that is what they say. Life is a gift. Like a violin is a gift. Somebody gives you a violin. Now you start carrying it with you all day, every day, even to the bathroom you carry it, and then even you carry it to bed and you sleep with it under your pillow. It's not going to make you a violinist. It will make you a violin carrier. So to learn to play the violin, I have to put in effort. I have to go to a teacher. I have to learn from the teacher. Then I have to practice. Then I have to spend hours of practice. And then it takes years to become an accomplished violinist or an accomplished pianist or a guitarist or whatever. So similarly, life, to become accomplished in living, it has to take effort. It has to take practice. And we first of all have to learn. You first of all have to go to a teacher and go to the scriptures, because that is where we learn what is life and how to live. And then I have to apply that, I have to practice it, and I have to put in effort. So that is why they say life is a gift. And now we shall study how living is an art. So the second part of my talk is, now how do I live my life so that life may become an artistic endeavor. It may become, because as we know, art is beautiful. When we see a beautiful painting, hear a beautiful piece of music, read a beautiful poem, our heart is filled with love. So just as we appreciate that artist, each and every one of us can make our life an artistic accomplishment. We may not know how to draw, we may not know how to sing, but through my actions, life can be beautiful service. So we say that we have three equipments that we have, each and every one of us. Of course, first of all is the human body. And we are blessed because the human body is a beautiful piece of engineering marvel. And we need to take care of that body just as we take care of our car. So the body needs to be taken care of. Everybody knows that you have to eat healthy, you have to exercise, you have to watch overindulging and all those things, you know, watch your weight, go to the doctor, have regular checkups. So that everybody knows. What I think is the most important is how do we take care of our mind? How do we take care of our mind? In our body, we are very particular. You know, I only eat organic food, or I go to this, you know, place where I buy things that are, and then we put in vitamins and all the healthy, and then we clean the food very well, and we, but our mind, we really don't take care of how our mind is. Our house, we keep it very clean, spotlessly clean. And if somebody is, you know, has dirty shoes, we say, please leave them outside. And our food should be clean. But our mind, how many of us take care of that our mind should be clean? We don't allow people to bring dirt into our house. But they can put dirt in our mind, and we allow anything and everything. Gossip, talk radios where they're talking hate about others. And we read on the internet, whatever, and then on the TV, you know, we are not even discriminating in what I should put in my mind. I just hear anything, I listen to everything, I talk to people, I associate with people I should not. So they say, be very careful, protect your mind. Let not dirt come in, and if it does come in, get rid of it. You know, dirt like jealousy or hatred or greed or selfishness or anger. Get rid of that, just as you like to get rid of the dirt in your house. First of all, don't allow it to come. If you must see things that are beautiful. Even in, when you meet people, see things that are good in them. Listen to good music. Listen to hymns of the Lord. Listen to beautiful songs. Read books that are spiritually uplifting, that make me a better person. So as you protect the mind, you will realize that your mind will slowly become more silent, more peaceful, happier. And then that such a mind is then can be offered to the Lord. Oh Lord, please come and reside in my mind. We know the Lord lives everywhere. But he likes to live in the heart of people in one place in the Gita. He says, I am everywhere. But in the heart of my devotees, I like to stay there. Because, you know, everybody wants to live in a pleasant place. God lives everywhere, but it's up to us whether we want to make the place dirty and ugly or we want to make a place where he loves to live. So they say, take care of the mind and take care of your intellect. Of course, the intellect and the mind are connected. Intellect is the ability to decide, the ability to discriminate. So reading good books and associating with good people is how do we take care of the mind and we take care of the intellect. How do we live well? First of all, by learning, you know, by read good books, listen to sermons, meeting good people. Talking about sermon, this reminds me of another little story. There was this man who goes to church. And the church was very full. And he actually went with the intention of stealing a hat. I know that's not a good thing. But people in that church used to leave their hat outside. And so he said, oh, when I go in, I'll leave a little early. And I'll pick up a hat and walk away. So after the sermon, you know, he didn't take the hat. And he goes up to the pastor and says, Father, you know, your sermon changed my mind. I came here with the intention of stealing a hat. But I didn't do that. Listening to you changed my mind. And the sermon was on the Ten Commandments. So the father was very happy. He says, oh, you know, I said, thou shalt not steal. Is that why you didn't take the hat? He said, no. When you said, thou shalt not commit adultery, I remembered where I had left my hat. So that is not called living well. So the next topic is discipline. How should we live? And the moment you hear the word discipline, especially you tell a teenager, discipline, no. I don't want people to tell me what I should do. I'm living in a free country. I'm free to do what I want. You know, that's the thing you hear everywhere. But a wise person once said, doing what you feel like doing is not freedom. Not doing what you feel like doing is freedom. Not doing what you feel like doing is freedom. Because, you say, if I feel like eating ice cream, I go out and eat. If I feel like partying, my mind tells me I do, then what I do, I become a victim of my mind. I feel like doing this, I just do it. I feel like doing. But if I say that, okay, I feel like doing this, but it's not good for me. It's not the right thing. Right now is not my time. Like a student, you know, studying for the exams, we always tell them, you know, now, you know, even though you feel like going out with your friends and you feel like going to the movies, you should not do it. Why? Because it is not the right thing for you. So discipline, living a life of discipline and moderation is very important. Even the streets, if you look at it, we all drive under some discipline. There is a certain code of laws called the California, you know, DMV, the code of the book. And we follow that. You stop at a red light and then you follow the speed limit and then you don't go down the one-way street. You follow all the rules. If everybody drove as they wanted in any direction, didn't stop at lights, then the traffic would become, you know, chaos. In the traffic, we follow rules, we follow certain discipline. In also in our workplace, you know, there are certain rules that you have to follow. There's a rules of this office. If I'm in manufacturing or I'm in industry, whatever I manufacture, there are some national rules and standards I have to follow. So rules we follow all the time. But when it comes time to our personal life, you say, I don't want anybody telling me. So discipline does not mean that you live a life of sorrow and don't enjoy and don't have any fun, because that is how we always stay. What we say is that live a life of moderation. Live a life of self-control. Yes, it's okay to have fun. It's okay to enjoy. But I have to have my goal in life. What is my mission? What is my purpose? And as we said in the beginning, My purpose is to realize the truth, to become one. And everything that I have to do in my life, I do with that goal in mind. Just as a person wanting to win the Olympics, he says, 8 years from now, in 2020, I'm going to be competing in the Olympics. So he starts from now itself. He or she, they will train in a particular way, eat a particular diet. Everything he or she is doing so that my goal in 2020 is to win the Olympics. And as the time comes closer, they won't go out and they won't party and stay out late at night because I have to take care of my body. So similarly, when my goal is spiritual upliftment, unfoldment, then I should do everything that is geared towards that goal. Anything that is taking me away from that spiritual path, whether it's my diet, whether it's my activities, whether it's the people I associate with. So when my goal is clear, then I should avoid activities, you know, just unnecessarily wastage of time. If I have a little extra time, instead of just surfing the net or just picking up the phone and calling, let me do something to make myself better or make the world a better place. So that is the mission, that is the goal. And they say, what is my essential nature and what is my non-essential nature? When they say I, then always they think that this body, that this is me. But what we say is that this body is a temporary house you are occupying. And this body is changing. I was young at one time, now I am older. My body gets weaker, my hair changes, all those changes happen. So that which is changing, which is not me, it is a temporary appearance. How about the mind and the intellect? That also changes. My emotions change, my thoughts change, my ideas change. When I was, a young man and going to Berkeley, oh, they are so liberal, this world should be liberal and everything. And then once they go out into the world and start earning, and then when the paycheck comes and then suddenly Uncle Sam takes 40%, then immediately they become conservatives. So people change. So that is not my essential nature. My ideas are not permanent. My thoughts are not permanent. My body is not permanent. What is permanent is, as we had said before, the spirit. That is who I really am. And that was there even when I was a child. If you look back, you can probably remember what you were doing at age 3 or 4. And then you remember what you were doing in school and college. And so that I that was present right from childhood till now is not the ego. It's not that little I, the little self, but it is that consciousness. It is that spirit. It is that essential in nature. And that is my essential nature. And that is what I have to constantly remember and constantly strive for. If I am an ambassador of God, if I am His creation, then I should make myself worthy of that, just as an ambassador of the United States, say, is posted in Burma or Egypt. He or she remembers that, okay, I represent the United States of America. So my actions should not be taken as something that is an insult to my nation. I should make my nation proud. So when I am here as an ambassador of God, as I have been sent by Him, I should make sure that my actions are pure and my actions justify, so that when I end my life, then I can proudly say that I did what He intended, what God intended me to do. So that is my essential nature and that is my duty. And that is what the main purpose of life is. That is how life can become an art. And hard work is required. As we said before, an Olympic athlete has to work hard. A person wanting to climb Mount Everest has to put in years of effort. A person wanting to build a new factory or start a new business. How many hours, if he has a new business, he's not going to say, okay, it's 5 o'clock, I need to clock out. No, he will be there till 7, 8 at night. He will even be going on Saturday and Sunday, and his wife will say, what is this? You're always at work. I never see you home. He says, no, it's my new business. I have to make it successful. So spirituality needs hard work too. But it's a work that is very joyful. In most other efforts, when you reach the goal, you get the joy. Okay, I wanted to, you know, build a new factory and start a new business. So for many years, I have hard work. And then finally, after 10 years, the business is successful and I make my first million. So then I am happy. Okay, for 10 years, I worked hard and sacrificed, but finally I got the goal. Or somebody wanting to climb Mount Everest, years of effort, but then finally at the top, they say, oh, it was all worth it. But spirituality is a goal that even the journey is very pleasant. As you go on the path, as you progress, you will find your heart is filled with more joy and more happiness and anand, what we call as bliss. And that is not joy caused by getting a, you know, eating a slice of pizza or listening to some music or buying a new dress. It is the joy within, because we are all that manifestation of that joy, that is God, that is all infinite joy. So even the path is joyful as you are, even though you may not reach that final goal of God realization, you know, it's okay. Whenever I get, it's good. If I get it in this life, it's even better. But even as I'm on the path, this path is full of joy. And those, you know, those of you who practice regular meditation and spirituality will attest to that, that this, as you progress, your desire to progress becomes more. It's almost like an addiction, but a good addiction, where this is something I enjoy doing, I want to do. So that's what they say, that at the end of the day, year is a good opportunity to look back and see. You know, a lot of people look back and say, in this past year, did I get a better job, or did I rise in my company, or is my net worth gone? I used to have 500,000, now I have 1,000,000. Is my stock portfolio bigger? They say, don't look at that, but look at, am I spiritually more evolved? Am I closer to God on December 31st than what I was on January 1st, 2002? Am I a better person? Have I contributed more to society? So that should be what you, and the New Year resolution should be, that may in this next year, may I do more for my fellow beings, and may I evolve spiritually. So then only your life can be a gift and the living can be an art. So let us make that our New Year's resolution. Thank you very much. Thank you. Something you disagree with, please feel free to.
A question would be, just out of curiosity, do you see God as a male figure in a human body, or do you see God as an essence, energy, and encompassing everything?
Actually, in Vedanta, of course, in Hinduism, we have male and female gods. We have male deities and female. But in Brahman, or the, in Vedanta, Brahman, or the consciousness, is considered as neutral. Like electricity, I've given that example many times in my class, but electricity, is it male or female? Electricity is energy. All the bulbs are illumined by electricity, the fan, the speaker that I'm speaking. So electricity is neither male nor female. It is the energy. So we consider God as neither male nor female, even though there are male and female deities. But that is done for us to love, because it is very hard to love God that is all-pervading, impersonal. It is very difficult. It is easier to fall in love with a figure, like when you see a figure of Jesus Christ or you see the cross, then it is easier to visualize that. But in reality, God or Brahman, as we call, is like electricity. It is the energy that is neither male nor female. It is that because of which I am able to speak and because of which you are able to listen at this moment. So it is the energy, and it is that which illumines not only humans, but all the animals, birds, plants, fish. Even plants need to be, you know, need to be revered and worshipped, because there's God in them. There's God in the animals. So when I see that universal consciousness, so God is neither male nor female.
When you are shaken from your peace, what restores it?
Actually, it's a long answer. I don't know how much time we have, but but I can make it short. For example, when you're moving around, you come across a lot of viruses and bacteria, right? When you have the food you touch, the table, everything has bacteria, and there's in the air, and people are coughing, and you cannot avoid yourself. You cannot walk around with a mask and with a, you know, shield, you know, completely covering you from head. What do? You increase your inner immunity, right? I increase my immunity so that viruses, bacteria may come, but I should not. And so by eating healthy, exercising, taking vitamins, taking in vaccines, you know, flu shots and all. So similarly, sorrows and problems I cannot avoid. You know, sorrows will be there in everybody's life. Problems will be there, and your internal peace will get disturbed. But I have to increase my inner immunity. I have to make myself stronger so that no matter what kind of problems the world throws at me, they could be financial problems, they could be health problems, they could be family problems, my husband, my wife, my children don't call me, my boss, my neighbor, you know, the person I work with. Problems will be, my car got, you know, totaled. You know, those kind of problems will come every day. One cannot avoid them. They're like viruses. They will be there. But if I make myself weak, then I will be susceptible to every virus. So every sorrow that comes from the world will disturb my inner peace and make me unhappy and make me sorrowful and make me complain. So I have to make myself stronger inside. I have to increase my inner immunity. And that is so how do you do that? By regular practice of spirituality and meditation. Because through meditation, I come to experience that I am that spirit and I'm not this body, I'm not this mind. So even though sorrows are coming to this body, I take care of them. It's not that if I get sick, I don't go to the doctor. If sometimes sorrows come to the mind, I say, okay, you know, this sorrow is coming. If somebody else is going through sorrow, I get sympathy. But internally, I am not disturbed because I have strengthened it. So through regular prayers, regular practice of spirituality, and regular meditation, you can overcome where then the sorrows do not have as much. It's not that you become a stone or become a rock, but sorrows do not affect you that much when you increase your internal immunity.
And I think we'll stop now, and I know that Dr. Mehta will be available for sure. Refreshments and discussion up there if you'd like to ask him a personal
Definitely.
Question on your own. Let's just thank him one more time for being here this morning. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.